Welcome, everyone, to this WebSphere Support Technical Exchange session. Today's topic is TX Series Tracing from Start to Finish. Today's presenter is Kevin Sager. Kevin is a Level 2 customer support rep for the TX Series and Kix TG products. He has worked with TX Series for close to 15 years. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Kevin. You may begin.
Thank you, David. Hello, everyone. Thanks for joining. I see a number of familiar names out there and a number of new names. So welcome all. Today, the topic is TX Series tracing from start to finish. The point of today's technical exchange is to get people familiar with the basics of tracing inside TX Series. This is to help customers out when they are performing tracing at when they're requested from the Level 2 group. We've had a number of new customers with new people, support people joining their teams, and from time to time, we have a little issue with getting the correct tracing out. So hopefully this WTSC session will help in that manner. Okay, Dave, let's move on to the first screen. Okay, today's agenda will explain what the tracing is, the different types of tracing, when to collect it, when to use it, and how to use the different types of tracing that are involved in TX Series. Okay, screen two, please. Okay, what is tracing? Tracing inside the product exposes the code path in which the product has taken. So if there's we're seeing a bug, we ask for trace to be taken to make sure that the path that's taken is the path that we wanted it to be taken. So the trace really exposes the internal code of the product. We use it to debug problems, and we have trace points within the built into the internal programs, so every time we encounter that program or function, it's displayed in the trace data. The tracing that we use is controlled by switches for the region, which you can see in the RD stanza, and also by commands or parameters on other commands for the SFS or the SARPC. Okay, page four. There are four different types of tracing within the product that we will request most of the time. There's the system trace, which is the internal trace of the region. And if you had region abend or a unexpected result from a test you're running, this is what we'll usually ask for. Okay, then there's the trace for the SFS and the PPC. If you're having issues in one of those two parts of the product, we'll usually ask for some type of tracing from them. This is more rare to have an SFS or a PPC problem since they're more stable, the more stable pieces of the product, and they're changes really haven't affected those two pieces as it has affected the region. In the next trace we would ask for will be the SARPC trace. We tend to do this a fair amount lately due to the problems with the we've been encountering with SARPC and timing issues. SARPC was introduced in version 6, and we've been settling it down over the past few years, and just at this point in time, if you're on the latest PTF, you'll see that the region has become a lot more stable in this area. And then our fourth piece is the IPIC trace. IPIC is a new feature of CICS. Of the CICS family. It's in TX Series, it's in the CICS Transaction Gateway, and it's in the CICS Transaction Server, which runs on the mainframe. And this is new. It's been released in the last few years. It's not fully implemented yet, but more and more pieces of it are coming out as we release product updates and new releases. And the IPIC does, like any new piece of the software, will have more bugs than the other parts. So getting an IPIC trace may be something that happens to you sooner rather than later. So we'll go over that today to make you feel comfortable knowing what to do when we ask for it. Okay, let's move on to slide 5. When to collect trace. Most of the time, level 2 or level 3 will request the trace be taken. On times when level 1 sees, or the in-country people see, a issue that they've seen before or know what kind of trace to go after, they may request the trace before they send the doc to us. And it's requested when there's a problem reported. Occasionally we'll ask for cores, but sometimes we'll ask for a trace also. Okay, slide 6, please. System trace. So this is the trace that runs inside the region for TX series. You'll have function point, function names, pointer values, values of buffers, maybe other parameters which are passed on the function calls between the functions within the region itself. Anything that's considered important is displayed at that function point or that trace point. For the region, the trace is not formatted, as most people would know if they've ever taken one. When you look at the trace file, it's highly unreadable. So there we have a utility that will format it. And we'll go over that in a slide here in a few minutes. Now, for the region, this is a little different than the other traces. Probably 10 years ago, the trace function or the trace facility within TX series was rewritten due to the bottleneck that it created when it was turned on. So we changed the tracing so that each thread of each process within the region generates a trace file. So turning on trace for the region will create a lot of trace files out in the dumpster one directory. And here in the last line, you can see a sample of the name of the file that will be created. Let's review this for how to interpret what you see here. So the first part of the trace name will be the region name. The second part will be the process which the trace was generated from. In this case, it was generated from an application server. You may see CICS IP or CICS LD there, or a number of other names that would start with CICS. The third section is the application server number. Here, for this one, this is server 105. You'll see when you start up CICS, it'll say starting application server, and it'll give you a number, and that should relate to that. The fourth parameter of the trace file name is the PID number. This is an AIX trace, so it has the 6 to 8 digit long PID, and this directly relates to the process ID that you see when you do an LS of the machine that the region is running on. The fifth parameter is the thread ID, and within the each process, there's multiple threads. Sometimes there's maybe 20. Sometimes on certain processes, you may see 100, or maybe upwards of 400 or 500 threads within the process. So this tells us what thread the trace is from. And then the last part of the name is saying that it was the CICS trace file. So we know that this file was a CICS trace and it's not something else generated by the region. Okay, let's move on to slide 7. Okay, activating the trace. Depending upon what kind of problem you have, we can have the trace started in different ways. Now, if the region's having the problem at startup or when the problem happens is unpredictable, or if you have one of these problems that may go days before it happens, we usually have the trace started at region startup. And to do that, in the region environment file, you add the environment variable CICS trace equals 1, and that turns the trace on for the region itself. And here you can see where the environment file for the region is located. The top one is for Unix systems, and the second one is for on Windows. Now, this is the default location for the environment file, and unless you change the install directory or the install drive, it will be in this location. Okay, slide 7, or slide 8, I'm sorry. Now, if the problem can be recreated easily, or you want to turn the trace on sometime after the region's running, we can turn it on dynamically. And to do that, we sign on to the region with the terminal, and we use these three commands to turn it on. And three commands you can see here on the screen are used two of the internal transactions within CICS. The CEMT command, all the hardcore CICS people know who what that is, and the CECI they are familiar with too. So with the CEMT, you can type in this command as it is here and hit enter, or you can work your way down through the panels on the CEMT. And you'll see that it'll come up with the on highlighted on the screen. And for the CECI command, you can type it in like it is, but with the CECI command, you have to hit it twice, because once you get this command in, it'll say ready to execute, and then you have to hit the enter key a second time to execute the command. So sometimes we have a problem in this area where people aren't familiar with the CECI, hit it once like they do with the CEMT command, and it doesn't perform the action we need it to do. So with the CECI, you always have to make sure you hit it twice and it says command complete when you're done. And then the last command here turns on the last piece of the trace. And once you complete all three of these, the trace files will start to generate in the dumpster one directory. Okay, let's go on to panel or slide number 9. Okay, then after you've provoked the condition within the region and generated the test that you wanted to accomplish, we reverse the command and turn the trace off. And here's how the commands you would use to do that. And once the trace is off or the region is down, depending upon what kind of tracing you were doing, you can format the trace files with the CICS FTRC command, or the CICS TFMT command, I'm sorry. And this is the CICS trace format. And you can format each trace file by itself, or you can format them all at one time by using the asterisk instead of file name. Most people use the asterisk because there's usually hundreds of trace files generated on a large region that's highly active at the time. So prepare to see a large number of files after your test if it's in an active production region. Now, the file that you have to send in will be the files that are formatted. And when you format the trace, an extension is added onto the trace file name of .fmt. So you can visually differentiate between the different files. And those all can be tarred up or zipped up and packaged to send to support. Okay, let's move on to panel or slide number 10. And here's a sample of a piece of trace that you'll see generated from the CICS region. So if you look at one of the trace files that were just generated, you'll see something close to this. And as you can tell, it's highly unintelligible unless you have the knowledge to really know what's going on in here. As you can see, on the first part of the line is a hook ID, which is used for the EIX systems on the tracing that was when it was first developed on that platform. The second is the thing that CICS and a date and time stamp. You can see this is from Tuesday, January 23rd at 11/11/2013, and the 9-10-digit number that you see there at the end is the milliseconds in which the trace entry was captured. Moving across the line, the next piece of information there is the region name. The one after that is the process ID. And then you move on to the PID number and the thread number. That information will always be stable. You'll see that progress down through the different files. You'll see the timestamps increase as you look down through each trace file. And the next pieces of the trace entry are internal to the region. Field that you see there that has the 202020 is a transaction ID. And since this piece of the trace was taken when a transaction was not involved, there's no trace ID, so you see the hex there for ASCII blanks. The next piece, or next item you see there in the trace is the storage pointer. And the part after that is the function name in which CICS was executing at the time. And this one is the SUP PR due condition time wait. And parameters that you see after that is the information that we thought was important to print out at the time of the trace function. So you have a couple address pointers, a value, another address pointer, and the value of zero. If you take a look down through here, you'll see the function name change and the parameters change as you look down through here. Now, what this trace is of is CICSAS process waiting for work, and what happening here is that it's waking up and starting to initialize a transaction on that application server. Okay, let's move on to slide 11. Okay, the system trace parameters. You'll find these in the RD stanza for the region. And these are most of the trace parameters for the region, but there were some additional ones. But these are the important ones that you'll need to work with. The first one here is the directory where the trace goes. And as I referred to before, the trace goes out to dumpster1 directory. And this is the parameter that sets that. Now, if you're expecting a large amount of trace, or the file system that you're using doesn't have a lot of room in the dump that's hosting dumpster1, you can change this to point to a different directory where you will have enough space. And the second parameter is for when you take a user trace, it shows that it's going out to the temp directory. And this is mostly when you do an application debugging, is when the user trace is involved. It's very rare that we have customers taking user trace anymore. Replaced by the customers using the CEDF facility and looking at the application programs through there. Okay, the third parameter is the aux trace, which is the aux flag, indicating the status of the aux trace flag. And you saw earlier we turned this on with the CEMT command and then turned it back off. A trace flag buffer indicates that each of the processes within the region will have a buffer for the trace within it. This can be turned on or off. If you turn it off, you'll see that the region can take a major slowdown when you start tracing. So we default this to have the buffer on, so when the buffer goes full, that chunk of trace is written at that time instead of each trace entry as it's generated. A trace master flag is set to off by default, and this was the switch that you turned on when on the first CEMT command of the three we reviewed earlier. And the system flag is the third command that we turned on. So having the master, the system, and the aux flags turned on manually or by the commands of the environment variable CISS trace equals 1 will activate the trace and override these defaults. The next parameter here, which is the second from the bottom, is the trace max size buffer. And this is the size of the buffer that's created within each process, which was just controlled by the trace buffer flag. But sometimes we'll ask for this to be increased to like a meg or maybe 4 megs when we are collecting problem documentation. Now, if we know a problem that you encounter results in the core, we may not ask for a trace, but ask for the trace buffer to be set to a larger size so that we can see the trace happening within the region but we'll see it in the core dump that's generated. There's a dump from the region if you perform a snap dump. And this is used when we just want to see the last few functions leading up to the problem to know how we got where we were at. Okay, and the last parameter here is trace system spec. Now, to get any type of trace, this needs to be set to all equals 4. Sometimes you'll see it set to all equals 0. And when you do see it that way, you should always make a change and set it to 4. A few years back, in version 5 and 5.1, there was a debate whether this should be set to 4 or to 0. And as we tested out the different parameters, we found that set to 4 or set to 0 does not have the region incur any more overhead when the trace was turned off. So we want this set to all equals 4. Now, if you do turn trace on and have it running and you get to a point where you're done and you don't see any trace entries in the trace files, the first thing to check is this parameter in the RD because it's usually set to zero. And this will especially happen if you've migrated regions over the last few years, which you started out maybe back in 4.2 or 4.3 or even in 5.0. This flag could be set by default to zero when you first created a region back then. And as you migrated it, it never got switched to all equals 4. Okay, let's move on to slide 12. Let's do the tracing for the FFS and the PPC. For the FFS and the PPC, you'll have a server piece and a client piece. The server piece is what you see, which is more prominent, because when you start the FFS or PPC, you start the server piece of it. Now, for processes to talk to the server piece, they need the client part of it. And those are the buried within the CICS region itself, or if you have a batch program that's within the batch utility, which talks to the SFS. And here you can see it pictorially that the PPC and the SFS, how the client piece within a region process is implemented. You'll see that with here as an example, we use the CICS AS, which is the application server, where the application programs run. And within the a couple of the threads of that process, we'll be running the SFS client, and if you are using the PPC gateway, the PPC gateway or the PPC client will be there. And you'll what this does is just add a couple extra threads to the process itself. And so when you make a call to use a SFS resource or file, or maybe make a call, an APPC call from your application program, these clients are used to talk to the other process. Okay, slide 14. Okay, with the SFS and the PPC, the trace is caught in a ring buffer. This is much like the trace buffer that's in the region, but with the SFS, you'll see the and the PPC, this buffer is kept in memory also. And as trace entries are written to it, it fills the buffer from top to bottom. And if you're as you're tracing, the trace entries are overwritten as file space is needed. So if you dump the ring buffer, you'll see a number of trace entries, and then you'll see the most current trace entry with the ones following it as the trace is being generated. So it looks like it. You'll see partway through the trace that the timestamps will change, and that's where the start and the end of the trace that's being captured is. That's normal and it's expected, but that's the peculiarity of how this trace buffer works. So the type of trace buffer we have here is what we call a wraparound buffer, whereas in the region, it's a buffer that's dumped and then flushed. Okay, let's move on to slide 15. Okay, activating the trace can be done in multiple ways. You can do it on the command that you start the SFS or PPC with. You can use pkadmin command, or you can use environment variables. Slide 16, please. Okay, and here we see how to use the command, the start command, to set the trace for the processes. Here we're using a sample of the SFS startup command. The second bullet point here, you can see the description of the SFS command as we have it in the manual. And the parts you want to look at is the small t and the big T flags. If, to implement this, the small t is used to set the trace specification that we request for the trace, and the big T is to direct the output of the trace. And here in the example, the first example, you'll see the SFS. We're having the SFS server all specification set, and the trace file being set out to a file. And the third part of this is the SFS name, where you can see in the ./. CICS/SFS/CICS/SFS1. That's the name. So the red piece is the trace spec, and the purple piece is the file output. And in the last statement here, we see a sample PVC gateway startup where we have a lot larger trace spec. And you can see all the different pieces of the trace spec are connected with equal signs. And the last piece of the spec is all, which says collect all the entries for that, for those trace specs. The difference between the trace spec for CICS and SFS were, in the SFS command you see a colon rather than the equal sign. And this is all part of notation. Either notation is correct and will work. And here in the trace file output that you can see, again, that we're going to be creating a file called trace.out, as we did with the SFS. Now, you're going to be asking, where does trace.out go? As it's specified here, it will end up in the working directory for the SFS or the PPC. So when you go looking for it, it will be down the /var/CICS servers/SSD/SFS or CICS/SFS/SFS name. And in there with the restart file and the message file, you'll see the trace file, and that's where the default directory is for the process. Now, you can change this to point to a specific file location. So you can say /temp/trace.out, and it'll go out to the temp directory. Or if you're in Windows, you can say /temp/trace.out, and it'll end up in the temp directory on the C drive. Let's move on to slide 17. A tracing with tkadmin command. What this does is, after the servers are up, you can go in and change the trace spec and the file location, the ring buffer, in the active process. This is much like the using the CEMT command or CECI commands within the CICS region. So in here, on we have a couple of examples of turning the trace on. Here with the tkadmin, the first one is we're going to change a trace specification on the server CICS SFS1, and we're saying that the SFS server equals all, just like we did on the previous command for the SFS in panel on slide number 16. And here, and in the second command, we're setting the ring buffer size to 4 meg so we can capture more trace. And then we have an example of tkadmin here, resetting the trace and turning it off. And to turn it off, we set the trace spec to all equals default, which is what the process will be using when it starts up to be normally. Okay, slide 18, please. And now, setting the trace and environment variables. There's different places where you can set the environment variable for use by the processes. In AIX, you can set an XE environment. In HP and Sun, you can use the XE profile. In Windows, you can set it in the environmental settings consideration that you have to watch here is that any process and all processes, when they start after this environment variable has been set in the at the system-wide settings here, will pick it up. So you have to watch by setting certain specifications, the client piece of the SFS or PPC may pick up this trace and start generating trace within the region. But depending on the setting, that's not necessarily a concern. And when we suggest tracing from level 2 or level 3, we take that in consideration and send you how to start up the trace with concern to having it with the other processes on the system. Okay, down at the bottom we see samples and environment variable here. The first environment variable, we're setting the ring buffer size as we did in the and with the TK admin command previously. And the second environment variable here, we're setting the trace spec. Okay, let's move on to slide 19. Okay, when you take a trace using the commands, DK admin command, we have to also force a dump of the trace buffer unless the process admins along the way or encounters a condition in which will dump the ring buffer automatically. But 9 chances out of 10, you'll have to go and dump the ring buffer after you get the process to encounter the air condition which you're having problems with. To do that, you use the TK admin command and use the dump ring buffer parameters, and you give it a directory name and then the server name which you want to dump the trace buffer from. An example here, we are sending the ring buffer, the entries from the ring buffer out to a file called sfs-test1.txt in the temp directory, and we're going after server CICS SFS1 again. Okay, slide 20, please. Okay, sometimes we'll ask for the trace to be redirected to a file if we want to catch everything that's going on for a longer period of time than what the trace buffer could capture. And you've seen this in an example of with using the big T option on the command. With the TK admin command, we can use the redirect trace parameters and have it directed out to a file called /temp/sfs-test1. So in the TK admin command, we say redirect trace. We give the server name where we want the trace to be captured from. And the next parameter is trace, which means we want the trace to go out to the destination specified there in the dest parameter. Okay, if we're going to use a file or environment variable to redirect the trace, we use the CICS TK trace redirect environment variable, and here you can see we set it to all equals file. Just like we did on the small t parameter on the startup command. Okay, slide 21, please. Okay, sometimes in a very specific air condition, we'll ask for trace from the client pieces of the CICS region that are running inside the CICS region. And with this, we use environment variables, but we set them in the environment file for the region, as we did with the CICS trace equals one environment variable. And that affects that region only. Along with that, you'll see the different trace specs that we send along to capture at that point. So this is a place where we'll request trace specifically from a region and not the system-wide environment variables that we set we seen said earlier. Okay, slide 22, please. Okay, I've talked a lot about trace specs, and there's probably a lot of questions out there. What is a trace spec? Well, each component of the built into the SFS and PVC supply different functionality. And each of these components have their own piece of trace associated with it. And we can control which of these components generate trace depending upon if it's included in the trace spec or not. And here you can see an SFS server, and you'll in the brown boxes there are the different components that make up that SFS server. So if you use the tkadmin list trace command and give it a server name, you'll see these print out. And if we go on to slide 23, we'll see a listing of the different trace specs for an SFS server. These, as you see them here, are set to default. So when we set the trace spec to all equals default, this is where the values are for that. And what these trace specs, this trace spec does is generate minimal trace as the SFS is running. There'll be key points that we capture internally in the trace buffer within the SFS or PPC. And if you ever dump the trace buffer from a SFS, you'll see that the very little trace is generated at default. So when we send a request to have trace started up on an SFS, you'll see that we'll ask for different parameters or trace components to be captured in the trace spec. And if we do, we usually have the setting equals all, which will change these trace specs from zero to all. So every trace point within that component is captured. Okay, let's move on to slide 24. Here, when we do see a trace spec, it can be different between the client and the server, and most likely they are because different pieces of the component are used depending upon if they're sending or receiving messages. And when it gets down to it, when we request a trace, we'll tell you what trace spec to run. So it's not an issue with you having to figure out which one it will be. We'll let you know which one that we need for that condition. If you've encountered multiple conditions in the past, you'll see that when we did request a trace spec, it's different from the one that you previously used. And as we saw in the PPC command earlier, that you can concatenate these trace specs into one string and turn multiples on at one time. Okay, slide 25, please. Okay, moving on to SARPC tracing. The SARPC is the standalone remote procedure call process for the region. And you can see this instantiated in the process SARPCD when you have a region running. And what this does is implement the protocol to enable the multiple processes of the CICS region to talk to each other. It's providing the transport layer for the protocol for these processes to talk on. And in the SARPC protocol, the SARPC daemon holds a piece of shared memory and for the other processes to use. So when CICSAS wants to talk to the application manager or the CICSAM process, it will toss the data it wants to send to AM into the shared memory segment at a specific location, and then when it calls, makes a call to the CISAM, it gives the address of where to pick up the message from. This way, we're not transporting a lot of data back and forth between there. We're using cross-memory services to fulfill the need. And it works that way between the SFS and the CISAS process when you're making calls to the SFS also. So any process within the region uses this mechanism to talk to the other process when it's required. Okay, let's move on to slide number 26. To control the tracing for the SARPC, it's done in the in a file, and this file is called CICS IPC underbar routing. And there's a number of parameters in this file that control the execution of the SARPC. And the location of this file, you can see, is different for different platforms. And here's a listing of where it's at. Okay, let's move on to slide 27. Okay, the two lines in the file that we need to change is the RPC line and the CIPC, or the CIPC line. And here you can see that where we're setting a trace spec again. Basically, the trace spec here is the asterisk, which says trace all. And the dot 2 is the level of, is the amount of trace that we want to generate from that piece. And your, the next parameter there after the first, after the second colon is file, which means direct it out to the file. And that file is defined after the next colon. And here we're sending it out to the rpc.log and the specific trace, we're sending it out to the specific.log file. So the enable trace for the SARPC portion of the product, you just have to remove the pound signs from these two lines in the file. Okay, let's move on to line 27. And now, to activate the SARPC trace, not only do you have to change the lines in those two files, you have to restart the processes for the region, and then whoever else is being run with the region, maybe the SFS or maybe the PPC. And you also have to restart the SARPC D daemon, which is the nanny for the shared memory segment that we use. Okay. Starting the trace, you want to verify that you don't have any rpc.log or cipc.log files in the location where you're going to start the new trace at. Because these files will stay there; they're not managed by anything, any automated processes. It's something that you have to do as an administrator to clean these up before you start a trace, and that ensures that when the files come to support that we're looking at the latest incident and not something that we asked to be captured maybe a few months earlier or maybe a couple of years earlier. Okay. The trace can generate large amounts of entries. So we'll say when we request a trace that it will generate a large amount, and that will also suggest that you have an area which can hold the expected output from the activity that's going to be going on. Now, to disable the trace, you put the comment signs or the pound sign back in the beginning of the line, and you have to restart the region and all the other processes associated with it. Okay, let's move on to the slide number 28, or 29, I'm sorry. Okay, IPC tracing. This is the latest feature, major feature that we've added to the region. And what it does is it traces the IP, the IPIC protocol, or as we call it, IPEC protocol. Now, the IPEC protocol trace has two parts, the function calls and the data segments. And each one can be activated separately or together. And here in the second bullet point are the commands to activate the two different tracing features of the IPEC protocol. So when we ask for an IPEC trace, we'll ask to have these set in the region environment file, and we'll have the region restarted. It can be a cold start or it could be a warm start. It really doesn't matter. However you would shut down and restart would be the method in which to do this. Now the difference with the IPEC trace is that the entries are tossed into the console file for the region. And depending upon how long or how much IPEC activity the trace generates, you may have a concern of file space in the region directory. So I'll ask you to verify that where you have the console file does have enough free space to handle the expected increase in the space used by the your increase of space generated by the trace. Okay, moving on to slide 30. We have the summary. We've gone over what a system trace is and how to control it and turn on and off. We've gone over the tracing for the SFS and the PPC, how to control it, turn it off, turn it on. We've gone over how to do an SARPC trace, and we've gone over how to do an IPEC trace. Okay, so let's move on to slide 31. And here I'll turn the presentation back over to Dave.
Thank you, Kevin, for a great presentation. Slide 31 has some additional WebSphere product resources, which we hope you may find useful. And finally, don't forget to connect with us. You could be notified about upcoming webcasts related to the product and topics discussed today by subscribing to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange mailing list. Simply send an email to wsehelp@us.ibm.com with the subject WSTE Subscribe. Also, if there is a topic you would like to see scheduled, or if you have any comments that would help us improve our future webcasts, please let us know at that same email address. You could also connect with us through our Facebook page and our Twitter account. Talk to us and let us know how we can make this program better for you. We welcome any ideas that you may have. Thanks again for your participation. At this time, we would like to open the lines for questions.
If you would like to ask a question over the phone line, please press star, then 1 on your touch-tone phone. You will be prompted to record your first and last name and called on at your turn. If you decide to withdraw your question after you are in queue, press star 2.
Okay.
Frank Morales, your line is open. You may want to check your mute button, Mr. Morales.
Okay. Hi, thanks. I have a question. In the last couple of slides, I believe the IPEC trace, you said to restart. Is that restart the region? You said restart the region. Is that the mainframe region?
No, that would be the TX series region.
Oh, TX series region.
Yeah.
Okay.
This presentation was for TX series, not for CICS transaction server, which runs on the mainframe.
Okay, so, okay, I got a little confused there. Thank you very much.
So we have the concept of having a region like that is the whole execution of the CICS like they have on the mainframe.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
No problem.
At this time, we will conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation and hope you'll join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on this site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Kevin, for presenting today.
This does conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation. You may disconnect your lines at this time.